This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to TSN Radio 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuke and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your texts to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Ref, you suck has been a chant heard throughout NHL arenas, especially this playoffs. We're pleased to be joined by Josh Smith from ScoutingTheRefs.com to determine if it's true that ref, you do suck. Josh, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. I can tell you, fans aren't going to win any favors by chanting that one.
Yeah, certainly not, Josh. Appreciate your time on this Saturday morning. Obviously officiating is always in the spotlight, but it seems this postseason, almost more than any other postseason of recent memory, the officiating or the glaring errors by officials have been more profound and more dramatic and more impactful. Would you agree or disagree with that statement?
I think officiating's a hard job, right? It's something when you've got guys doing it in real time, keeping track of the fastest game in the world on the ice. You got to make sure your positioning is good for the call and that you're staying out of the way of the play. And then you've got folks at home and broadcasters who've got, you know, slow-mo replay, a million different angles. So I think it's really easy to pick these guys apart. I think it's easier than it's ever been to say, hey, you guys made the bad call there. You know, in the past, it might be a debate on, it's a good call, it's a bad call. Now, you know, you've got Twitter with slow-mo multi-angle replays seconds after the call was made. So I think it's a lot easier to dissect the play and say, this was a good call, this was a bad call. I think there's more attention placed on it. It's easier to say, hey, this is why I don't think it was the right call. But you know, you got to remember that these guys are operating not with replay, not with multiple angles. They're making calls real time on the ice. So it's definitely hard, but it's a lot easier for us to find fault.
You know, Josh, we got to talk about game one of the Bruins Hurricane series. I mean, we're going to get into, you know, last round as well. But, you know, as you know, I know you were pretty, vocal on Twitter and you were active on Twitter and you saw that, you know, the refs were criticized pretty heavily, specifically, you know, in the third period. And I'm talking about Dougie Hamilton, you know, and that penalty that was given to Dougie Hamilton. There were two penalties, but the one I'm talking about is the one that was called for roughing on Joachim Nordstrom. And then there were a lot of fans, specifically fans of the Hurricanes, that thought the Bruins should have got a penalty for Sean Corrali collided with Svechnikov there. I guess, how did you think the referees handled that specific call? Because, I mean, that looked like, you know, that what Dougie Hamilton was doing was just bracing for a hit. And by the way, the referees were Dan O'Rourke and Marc Jonette for that game. But specifically the reffing in that game, what did you think the Dougie Hamilton penalty?
You know, I think, first of all, I just want to say I loved Hamilton's comments after the game that he watched the replay and he didn't think any of them were a penalty. Like,
yeah.
You know, now we've got guys reviewing their own calls, which is hysterical. I was a little surprised, everybody says playoff hockey, you put the whistles away and, you let the guys play. Now, I'll be the first one to admit that letting them play isn't necessarily, the right answer too, because you're deciding a game based on non-calls instead of deciding a game based on calls. I think it was a little surprising just to see, you know, where the standard is and what kinds of things get called that, you know, why was that called in this instance when I don't know that necessarily, you know, if that happens 10 more times in the game, are we going to see 10 different penalties? And I don't think that was the case. So, there's a line between what you want to set the tone on, what you're going to allow and not. And the one part that we're not privy to is what conversations were taking place on the ice between the teams and the officials. You know, did we have warnings issued to the benches or to the players to say, hey guys, you know, cut this garbage out. Next time I see one of these, the guys go into the box. And, if that happens and we're not privy to that information, then, you know, for the guys on the ice, it makes a little more sense. Not saying that that's what happened here, and I honestly don't know that call gets made by every official every time in that situation.
You know, Josh, Dan O'Halloran and Eric Furlatt, who were the refs involved in the Vegas-San Jose game, who made that controversial call in Game 7, they were, I believe, not working the remainder of the playoffs. Do refs have to, do they play a little bit fearful now because they're so concerned, especially in critical games like that, of what a call like that could do and how it could impact their ability to ref in the playoffs?
I don't think so. I mean, you're really looking at it on a game-by-game basis, and you're so worried about the play and what's going on right in front of you to make the call at that time. You know, I don't recall ever seeing a situation where we've had a controversial call that was as big as that one and involved a major penalty and mm-hmm. swung the game so heavily. And then you see the officials not moving on, especially when it's two veteran officials who, you know, Halloran had 10 straight cup finals or for lots worked finals before. So to see that was a little surprising. I don't think it makes you call the games differently, but I think, too, those situations when you've got that major match penalty are so infrequent, you're still going to call it the same way. I mean, I'll look at the McAvoy hit, and I know people are criticizing the officials for that play. Kelly Sutherland's right on the play. He sees the hit. It's a minor penalty. Whether or not that was the right call was huge on Twitter, but to the officials then and to Sutherland, it's either got to be a minor or it has to be a match penalty for intent to injure. There's nothing in between that he could have called. So, you know, in that situation, he erred on the side of, I saw him hit, you know, I don't think there was intent to injure. All I can give him is a minor penalty. You know, that was one of those situations where, you know, there was the right call for the rule book, not because of what had happened just prior. And then obviously we saw that player safety issued a suspension, which is how that's supposed to work.
Are you surprised there's not an option for a major penalty in that instance?
Yes, and after talking with Kerry Fraser, apparently that's the way the officials wanted it with what player safety was doing. They really wanted to take out that interpretation piece and say, look, it's either a minor penalty or you intended to injure him. It's a match penalty. You're gone for the game. So apparently that was by design to leave it in the hands of the officials to make the call from what's on the ice. And as far as the degree, let player safety revisit it. Of course, that does absolutely nothing for Columbus Blue Jackets in an elimination game there.
Absolutely. Josh Smith from scoutingtherefs.com is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing officiating in the NHL playoffs. And Josh, right now I'm on a Twitter feed and it's called @officialNBArefs. And this is a verified, legitimate, official Twitter account of the NBA refs. And they're great about interacting with the community and providing insight into some of the calls made by NBA officials. When you compare and contrast the transparency between what the NBA does with their officials and what the NHL does with their officials, do you think the NBA, which is way more transparent and way more visible with how the officials come to their decisions, are doing a better job than the NHL does?
I absolutely think so. You know, we've been in contact with the folks over at the NBA just to talk about what they do, how they do it, and just that they really are doing a terrific job. I think, you know, as far as officiating in general in professional sports, they're the model organization right now with how they interact with people by having that Twitter feed, by doing they've done ref game watching situations where they'll live tweet along with the game to just clarify. And it's something that at Scouting the Refs we've often tried to do because the NHL is not really embracing the social media part, even just to provide an explanation of why was the call made this way or what are the officials looking at here. I think they do a terrific job of access to the officials, of providing clarifications to the rule book from an official standpoint. I'd love to see the NHL do something like that. I think not only do you, you know, improve public perception, but you get people, fans, broadcasters to better understand the rules. And I think when they understand the rules, they're less frustrated with the officials and understanding how the game has to be called. So I think the NBA does a brilliant job there.
Josh, we wanted to ask you about series supervisors, and Bill McCreary is the series supervisor for the Bruins Hurricanes series, and I believe that it's going to be Don Van Massenhoven, if I'm not mistaken, for the Western Conference final between the Sharks and the Blues. Maybe you would have some insight, but I believe Don Van Massenhoven is going to be the series supervisor. But when you're talking about, you know, this role, for those who aren't familiar, and Scouting the Refs does a great job by letting everybody know who the refs and linesmen are going to be for each game, and same thing goes for series supervisor, but what exactly does a series supervisor do in the playoffs, and how do they relate and discuss all the games with the head coaches and the teams?
So, you know, you've got the officials and they're rotating around. The chance of one guy working, you know, two games in a series, maybe three if it goes seven, is all you're going to see with repeat guys. So as far as consistency goes, that's where the supervisors come in to sit down with the officials, talk about, you know, here's what we're going to look for. Here's what we saw in game one and game two. When you guys go out there for game three tonight, these are the hot spots. These are the players to watch. These are the types of infractions that we've been trying to crack down on throughout the series of, you know, making sure the slashes stay off the hands. It's pretty detailed. I want to say I was shared some notes a couple of years back, and it's very detailed on what the supervisors get to with the officials, just to try to level set and try to keep that consistency, and you know which players, which coaches, which buttons are going to be key. So when it comes to consistency across a series, that's where you want to look to the series supervisor to try to drive how it's been called or how the games go from game to game, because it's obviously a different officiating crew. And they're meeting with the officials every night to, you know, do a post game on how the calls went, what was done, what may have been missed or what could have been handled differently. So they're really managing that series from an officiating perspective.
Josh Smith covers the world of officiating in the NHL and AHL levels. Josh, always appreciate your time. Be sure to check him out at scoutingtherefs.com and on Twitter at scoutingtherefs. Josh, thanks for joining us this morning. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the game tonight.
Take care, Josh. Thanks again. When we come back, we shift our focus to the Western Conference Final, Game 1, later tonight between the Blues and the Sharks in San Jose. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
He had the game winner, Game 7, in that remarkable comeback. Against Vegas, Cedric Paz scores! The game is tied!
Are they checking for offside here? There's a little bit of a delay here.
They are. You got to watch the bench. That's the key. That's the key. That's offside. That player is offside. It's a sloppy change.
After coach's challenge, it's determined the play was offside.
From a 2-2 tie to an eventual San Jose Sharks victory, they're moving on to the Western Conference Final against the St. Louis Blues. It was a hell of a couple Game 7s earlier this week, one between the Sharks and the Avs and the other one between the Stars and the Blues, and now the Blues and the Sharks play each other starting tonight. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Want to remind you quickly about a programming note in case you want to be a little bit, wave the Canadian flag and be a little nationalistic. Tomorrow afternoon, Canada against Great Britain in a battle of hockey powers or something like that. I'm not 100% sure. 1 o'clock puck drop here on TSN Radio 1290. We've got complete coverage, of course, of all of Canada's games at the World Hockey Championships. Off to a bit of a rocky start, losing to the Finns yesterday. Canada looks to rebound tomorrow afternoon against Great Britain.
Yeah, what a goal by Kaapo Kakko, who we expect to go number two to the Rangers. And, you know, Jonathan Marchessault got the only goal for the Canadians, but Brent Wallace just tweeted this out a few hours ago. Carter Hart is going to get his first start of the tournament against Great Britain, and Devils prospect Mackenzie Blackwood is actually going to back up Carter Hart. Matt Murray is going to get he's going to get that game off. We expect Matt Murray to get the majority of the starts for Team Canada, but nice for Carter Hart to get a start for Canada. He had a great little run with the Flyers at the end of the season, but yeah, a disappointing loss, but it's only the first game of the tournament, and Finland is one of those teams that's a favorite in this tournament. So as we know, it's never easy for Canada. You're not going to just cakewalk to the finals, but
The Russians should win the tournament with the lineup that they're putting out there.
Well, especially if Putin's in the lineup.
I was going to say, isn't Putin there?
I mean, just keep the carpet away from him.
Well, I was going to say, you see him tripping over that carpet.
That was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
The best part of it is he's celebrating. He's doing his lap. He's doing his lap of torture, I believe it's what it's called. And you see the two guys who are trailing behind him. He doesn't see the carpet coming, but I guess his handlers see the carpet coming, and they're like desperately trying to alert him that he's about to trip over the carpet. And he tripped, and the rest of the world laughed at his misery.
I watched Red Sparrow yesterday, so I'm not making any comments.
Oh, there you go. I guess I'm a target. My name, again, Ezra Ginsberg. That's G-I-N-S. Anyways.
Well, the best part of those highlights.
Yeah.
You know, I think he scored 8 goals in that, you know, celebrity game or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
And you can actually see on one of the highlights that I saw where the goalie actually lifts his pad off the ice. Like, everybody's talking about, you know, Putin scored 8 goals and, you know, how good of a hockey player he is. First of all, he can barely skate. And the goalies are just, I mean, it's Putin. What are you going to do? You're not going to stop Putin. So it's just pretty funny how, you know, he scored 8 goals, but There was basically no goalie in the net.
It's true. It's not Laine scoring 5 against the Blues. It's not quite the exact same thing. Anyways, again, you can look forward to that and World Hockey Championships coverage on TSN and TSN Radio for the next couple of weeks. Let's talk about the Western Conference Finals. As I mentioned, they get underway tonight in San Jose. The Blues and the Sharks. I guess let's look back at the West at the game sevens first as well. Did you have a problem with that goal being disallowed? The one Landeskog was offside.
He's not part of the play, right, guys? But mm-hmm. I mean, the referees got it right there. I mean,
right call.
I mean, he's in the zone. I mean, mm-hmm. he's on the ice. He should have been off the ice. And yes, he's not an active player. He's not one of the five active skaters. But both of his skates are on the ice. He's in the zone. So it was offside, and obviously, you know, that goal would have tied it up. It was Colin Wilson, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That changed the outcome of the game, right? I mean, Colorado ties it up, would have tied it up, but, San Jose obviously went on to win the game, and they held on there, but, wow. I mean, I don't like to see that. I don't think any of us really like to see that. Obviously, unless you're a Sharks fan, you'd love seeing that, but you just don't want games to be determined on I understand why people were upset because Landeskog was going off the ice. It had no impact on the goal. But, I mean, video review exists to find things like
and to overturn
calls, right? So, it was offside.
It was just a mental mistake by a very good and smart player at the worst possible time.
Right. It was a good challenge by Pete DeBoer.
And I was going to say, and then if you don't want that to happen, then don't put a coach's challenge in. If you don't want the coach's challenge, because that's the whole point of coach's challenge.
Think about it, Dave. If the Avalanche tie that game up and then the Sharks are wrong, they get a penalty.
That's right.
Right? So, I mean, it's such a huge call.
Of course. And again, it was, had been down, I think, 2-0, come back. And that would have, like you said, Drew, tied the game. So it's, it sucks from a entertainment standpoint, because it really, that was, and then I think they went up 3-1 and then, obviously Colorado tried to fight back. But the fact is that, if you don't like that, then you don't put a coach's challenge into the game, because the whole purpose of that is to allow the team to get a call right that they think was made incorrect or wasn't made.
Yeah. And the coach's challenge was never really for that kind of play, but it's an unintended consequence. The reality of the situation is the rule exists and the officials got it right when they reviewed it, and good on the Sharks for knowing to look at
it. Well, and good on the Sharks video review team for being able to quickly assess, hey, let's see what happened there. And then, of course, make the call down to the
shout out to Matt Prefontaine.
There you go.
He's the Jets video guy.
And in Dallas, or pardon me, between St. Louis and Dallas, that game seven, I mean,
that was amazing.
The Ben Bishop's show for, I mean, I guess, four periods until they finally were able to get
Patrick. I don't know about
Patrick
you guys,
Maroon.
But I thought that Dallas was winning that game just because it didn't look like they were going to score on Ben Bishop. I mean, that was one of the most incredible playoff performances of all time, right? You think of, Kelly Rudy making 73 saves and Bishop with, what was he at, 53 saves like that. So, just incredible. And obviously, Patrick Maroon is a great story. He's from St. Louis, and he was a guy that, signed the 1-year deal with the Blues. We thought that maybe his NHL career was over, and, he's got 3 goals in these playoffs. But, looking ahead to this series, Drew, I mean, the Blues and Sharks, you're seeing, I think, maybe more people picking the Sharks to win this series just because of the talent, and you've got, the top defenseman, Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson. But I'll tell you something, Alex Pietrangelo, I don't know if we've ever seen him play this well in the playoffs. Obviously, you go back to 2016, that's going to be a big storyline heading into tonight's game, right? The Blues and the Sharks played in 2016, the Sharks won in 6 games, but this is a much different Blues team. I mean, you didn't have Robert Thomas. You didn't have Tyler Bozak. You didn't have Patrick Maroon. I mean, you didn't have Vince Dunn. Colton Parayko was a young defenseman back then. Mm-hmm. So you've still got, a big chunk of that defense. You think of, we talked about Pietrangelo, Bomeister, but different goaltender. I mean, Jake Allen was the goaltender. Or was it Brian Elliott? No, it was Jake Allen back in 2016.
Would have been both of them.
It's a much different team, right? And, San Jose is coming into this series with all of the momentum, 2 game 7 wins. I mean, I'm picking the Sharks to win the series, but I think it's going to be a 6 or 7 gamer. Yeah, I really do. It's going to be close.
They're too close in talent, and I think it's going to be the Sharks as well, but I expect that it's going to be a close series. You look at, the wild card for the San Jose Sharks, as you remember back to our playoff preview show that we did, and Shawnee Asor is in studio with us producing us today. He was on for the playoff preview show. We said, what's the wild card for the San Jose Sharks? It's goaltending. It's Martin Jones. And if Martin Jones can just be average, then the San Jose Sharks, I thought, they were my dark horse team coming out of the West.
Yep.
And, games 1 through 4 against Vegas, Martin Jones wasn't any good. Since game 4, So in the 10 games, you know, in the 10 games since then, he's 7-3, a 2.13 goals against average, and a .928 save percentage. I mean, those are good numbers. If Martin Jones can be that, if he can be, you know, a goals against a little over two and a save percentage in around .920, .925, I think the Sharks are going to be in a good position for to end up going back to the Stanley Cup final.
Right.
Again.
Absolutely. At this time of year, conference finals, goaltending is always going to be huge. Jordan Bennington has been really good in the first two rounds. As you mentioned, Martin Jones' save percentage, you know, since the first four games of the first round, .928, I mean, that's very impressive stuff. So Martin Jones has been really impressive, you know, since the early part of the playoffs. But, you know, for me, the big issue here for the Blues is going to be, how do you score more goals? Because, and the special teams, I mean, that's something we have to mention. The second round, the Sharks and the Blues were just horrible on the power play, 8-9%, less than 10%. And when you talk about, you know, the key matchups and all of that, I mean, you have to get more production, as far as I'm concerned, from Ryan O'Reilly. Didn't have a single goal in the second round. He was really good in that first round series against the Jets. So you got to get more from Ryan O'Reilly, and I think you got to get more from guys like Alex Steen. You know, he's struggled, and obviously, you know, we're in Winnipeg here, so we love Steen, and we always hope that, you know, he does well. But, you know, I think you're going to need more out of a guy like Braden Schenn. I mean, he didn't exactly light it up in the second round. Obviously, Jaden Schwartz, you know, he is a key player for the Blues as well. But Vladimir Tarasenko, I mean, he hasn't scored at even strength. Yeah. All of his goals, he's got no assists. He's got 5 goals, and all of them are on the power play. So Tarasenko is a key for me as well. But when you talk about the San Jose Sharks, right, you've got Logan Couture with 9 goals. You've got Thomas Hertl with 9 goals. Timo Meier has been really good in these playoffs. I mean, we know that Joe Pavelski's back. He had a goal and an assist in Game 7. So, I mean, the Sharks are the better offensive team. For me, it's going to be the Blues. Where are they going to get their goals from?
Yeah, Tarasenko has been, I mean, nobody's talking about him because they're into the Western Conference Final, but his performance has been fairly miserable this playoff series. I mean, he's not been the driver of that St. Louis Blues offense by any stretch of the imagination. It's been Jaden Schwartz. It's been Ryan O'Reilly has been very good. It's been Patrick Maroon stepping up in all the big moments. But Vladimir Tarasenko has absolutely been pulling a disappearing act, and I'm very surprised about that. I thought that, especially in the second round after he was average at best against the Jets, I thought he would pick it up, but he certainly hasn't been anything to write home about.
Braden Schenn had 1 goal in the series against the Jets. That was in Game 5.
Yeah.
And he had no goals against the Stars. So again, I like Braden Schenn. I mean, good Saskatchewan boy, but you know, 1 goal in 13 games. So he's going to be a key guy for them. And as you mentioned, Drew, and I mentioned it as well, I mean, Tarasenko, he is the one player on the Blues, I think, that has game breaking players. I mean, Jaden Schwartz as well. I mean, he had the hat trick against the Jets and all that. We know, you know, that Schwartz is a great player, but Tarasenko is the most skilled forward on the Blues. So he's going to be key. If the Sharks can shut him down, and if he's not producing, I really don't think that the Sharks are going to lose this series.
When we come back, Amy Markscores of KMOX Radio in St. Louis joins us. She covers the Blues for more talk on the Western Conference Final. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From KMOX Radio in St. Louis, Amy Markscores is our guest. She is a reporter for the St. Louis Blues. Amy, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Amy. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Western Conference Final that gets underway later on tonight between the Blues and the Sharks. And last segment, we were sort of giving our little preview of the series, and we were saying that the big question is, from our perspective, is do the Blues have enough offense to match that of the San Jose Sharks? And you look at, you know, the performances of Braden Schenn, you look at the performances of Vladimir Tarasenko, and both have been struggling so far, especially offensively this playoffs. Is that a key determining factor in this series for you, if the Blues get enough scoring to be able to knock off the San Jose Sharks?
You know, it has been a point of discussion in St. Louis. You mentioned Vladimir Tarasenko and Ryan O'Reilly, with Tarasenko, four of his five goals are on the power play. With Ryan O'Reilly, he has been characteristically quiet. His stats aren't quite what they were over the course of the regular season, and which is understandable because you felt at times Ryan O'Reilly was carrying this team. I would like to say that when the Blues were gasping for breath in the cellar of the NHL, Ryan O'Reilly was doing chest compressions to keep them alive. So you wonder if maybe there's a little bit of fatigue because this is as further than he's ever been in the playoffs. So while we have looked at, you know, the Blues leading scorers and how they haven't brought that production to the table, somehow they've been able to find ways to get the job done. You look at Jaden Schwartz, who had an abysmal year statistically in the regular season, and he is shooting at 23% right now. It seems like he has the golden touch. And you look at their third line of Pat Maroon, Tyler Bozak, and Robert Thomas, and how they've come to life. So I know it's at some point we go back to that cliche, your star players have to be your star players. But for the Blues, somehow every night they've found the depth, they've found the resources to come out on top. So, yeah, somehow they're getting the job done without the big sexy numbers.
You know, Amy, you mentioned Patrick Maroon, and we have to go back to the last round and that overtime goal in the second overtime. You know, he's a St. Louis native. You know, that was the second game winner of the playoffs. I mean, just take us back to watching that game. And, you know, your colleague Chris Kerber had an epic call of that game-winning goal by Patrick Maroon. But what was it like watching that goal? And it seemed like, you know, it was so fitting that Maroon scored the game winner and series winner.
Yeah, it really was. And there was a convergence of 7-2, if any of you are superstitious. It was the Pat Maroon rally towel night. So all the chairs at the Enterprise Center had the number 7. It was game 7 on May 7th. And, of course, the hometown kid scores that goal. You know, I think that night was encapsulated by this extraordinary picture that came out in USA Today. And it's during the handshake line, you have Pat Maroon hugging Ben Bishop, who is also a St. Louis native, went to high school in St. Louis, with the St. Louis flag in the background. And so this incredible spectacle of Game 7 was homegrown. And you felt that with Pat Maroon when he scored. Now, I don't know that we were thinking before he scored, we're thinking of St. Louis that much. I think a lot of fans were thinking, oh my goodness, the Blues have 50-something shots on goal. They can't score on Ben Bishop. This is going to end with a fluky goal by Dallas. I think that's what a lot of us were thinking. But at the minute he scored, it was sevens everywhere. It was Pat Maroon. It was the hometown kid, with a lot of comparisons to the 2011 World Series with David Freese. If you guys remember the hometown kid, David Freese, really winning the World Series for the St. Louis Cardinals. So it was a big deal.
Amy, obviously at the beginning of the season, with the way things were going for St. Louis, this was not a team that we were talking about as a potential Stanley Cup winner, but obviously it's continued to build since that Christmas break, and they've been the hottest team in the NHL. But what's the excitement like with the fan base? I mean, because they obviously, again, probably like a lot of us, weren't expecting that from this squad. And, you know, Enterprise Center looked like it was about to blow up when they won. And so what's it been like from the fans that you're hearing, that the general excitement in St. Louis?
Yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, we're talking about on January 2nd, right? The Blues are in last place. They're 11 points out of a playoff spot. People were typing out on social media the hashtag lose for Hughes. I think they thought this season was a waste. We talked about trading Vladimir Tarasenko. People talked about trading Alex Pietrangelo. It was complete panic mode because this team had such high expectations. Then once things started to turn around, and I say there are two phenomenon that met. There was this meeting of two phenomena that had that not both of those happened, the Blues wouldn't be where they are today. And those two things are Craig Berube and his message, the way he turned this team around, the way he communicates with the players and got the team to buy in that they were a playoff team. And then the historical emergence of rookie Jordan Binnington, because what Binnington allowed the players and the fans to see was success results. So Berube had the message. Binnington allowed the team to see the success results in accelerated fashion. You have that 11-game winning streak. It gets the fans the buy-in. The players start having fun again. And they just never looked back, and they turned into the team that everybody thought they could be. I mean, you look at the second half of the season, that pace is a 118-point pace if they were to carry that out throughout the entire season. And now that they're in the Western Conference Finals, they've been a good team for longer than they've been a bad team. So winning covers a multitude of sins for sure. And I think if anything now, the rough start has just made the Blues' emergence as a top team that much more exciting.
Amy Markscores is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Amy is a reporter for KMOX Radio in St. Louis, covering the St. Louis Blues. You know, Amy, I shouldn't be surprised or really, you know, impressed by his performance anymore because he's just so consistent and he's such a talented defenseman. But Alex Pietrangelo was absolutely terrific in that series against the Dallas Stars, averaging over 26 minutes per game in time on ice. You know, there's no reason to think he can't do it again against the San Jose Sharks, but does he need some assistance from some of his other defenders to help carry the Blues into the next round and into the Stanley Cup Finals potentially?
Oh, certainly. You know, Alex Pietrangelo is interesting because so many people talk about his ability to contribute offensively, but he is so sound defensively. Al MacInnis, you know, the chopper who played for the St. Louis Blues, lives in St. Louis, is part of the Blues franchise and the Blues community. And I love talking to him about Alex Pietrangelo. MacInnis's respect for Pietrangelo's defensive acumen is through the roof. And you see Pietrangelo playing such high minutes against the top players in the league. So yes, his defensive ability, he carries the team, he leads the team. But the Blues are so deep on defense that during the series with the Dallas Stars, for instance, at times they had Robert Bortuzzo and Michael Delzato as healthy scratches sitting in the press box. I think both of those players would have made the Stars roster. So the Blues have such defensive depth. You look at Colton Parayko and the way he's developed on the blue line, and that pairing of Parayko and veteran Jay Bouwmeester has been lights out. They were the team, they were the pairing that went up against the Wheeler-Shifley line. They were the pairing that went up against Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. So as great as Alex Pietrangelo is, the Blues are deep enough on defense to have that help, to have a pairing of Parayko and Bouwmeester go up against the top lines as well.
You know, Amy, we can't have you on and not talk about Robert Thomas. We talked about Patrick Maroon earlier, but we know how good that third line has been for Craig Berube in the first round series against the Jets. Thomas, Bozak, and Patrick Maroon were excellent. A lot of people don't know this, actually, but Robert Thomas is currently living with former Jet Keith Tkachuk. His son Matthew Tkachuk and Robert Thomas played together for the London Knights of the Ontario Hockey League, so that's a nice little tidbit for Jets 1.0 fans, but Robert Thomas, you know, had the big assist, hit the crossbar, and then it went off of Ben Bishop. Pat Maroon, you know, scored the series-winning goal. But for you, does Robert Thomas just continually amaze you for what he's doing as a 19-year-old?
No, my gosh, absolutely. I mean, you think about it. He was playing against teenagers last year. He was in junior hockey, and earlier this season, Doug Armstrong made the decision not to send Robert Thomas to play in the World Junior Championship. He told Thomas, he said, you're an NHLer now, it's time to put juniors behind you. And Robert Thomas said that was the moment he turned his back on juniors and knew that that's not where he belonged anymore. And it's funny that you bring up the Tkachuks, because Robert Thomas is a font of stories about the Tkachuk family. And now both Matthew and Brady Tkachuk are back home. So you can imagine what that house is like. And every morning they wake up and ask Robert if he wants to go play golf. He says, I can't. I've got a game. But the way Robert Thomas has developed is so impressive. You see his confidence. And this particular line of Pat Maroon and Tyler Bozak with Thomas has allowed his skill to really blossom. Bozak called Thomas the bus driver of this line. You've got the big rig and Pat Maroon throwing his body around so strong on the puck, getting in front of the net. You've got Tyler Bozak with his ability to win faceoffs and be strong on the puck. And then you've got Robert Thomas, who I like to use the word fancy. He's got some fancy skill, and it's not just his stick handling, but it's his edge work. The way his skates and his hands move, you see that elite forward, and it has been so exciting, and it's easy to forget with some of the plays he makes that he's a teenager still.
No, Amy, it's I asked you about the fans earlier, and sometimes when celebrity fans show up, it can be a little bit annoying, but for John Hamm, the madman actor, he's a St. Louis native, born and raised, so what's it like having him involved, and he's a big supporter of the St. Louis Blues?
Yeah, it's always fun. You know, you have John Hamm has been at the games, and the crowd goes nuts when they show him, and then you also have Jenna Fischer from The Office, who's from St. Louis, so she put out a video that they play on the Jumbotron. And of course, you know, St. Louis is such a big baseball town, and the connection between the St. Louis Cardinals and the St. Louis Blues is so tight. Very often, I can't even tell you how many times you'll see Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright up in a suite during the games. And I'm not sure that you get a louder cheer than you do when they show Yadi in his Blues jersey with his Blues hat, and the crowd just goes wild. And so Yadi gets a louder yell than John Hamm. Yadi's a big celebrity here.
Well, I've been cheering for him. He's my catcher on my fantasy baseball team, so he's been doing yeoman's work for me this year. So
yeah,
I've been cheering for him as well.
And Amy, if we're talking about famous people from St. Louis, we got to give a shout out to Nelly and the St. Lunatics.
That's right. I don't know that Nelly was at the last game, but they always play some Nelly songs. I mean, St. Louis, it's known as flyover country, but we're a hidden treasure. I think, you know, when we were playing the Jets, actually, there were so many comparisons. I didn't know Winnipeg was the gateway to the West. That's St. Louis's nickname, the gateway to the West. And so I think Winnipeg and St. Louis are maybe sister cities.
Well, it's getting a little hot in here, so we'll let you go, Amy. Amy Markscores covers the St. Louis Blues for KMOX Radio.
Thanks a lot, Amy.
Amy, appreciate your time. Enjoy the Western Conference Finals.
Thanks so much, guys.
Take care. When we come back, we talk about our favorites for the Conn Smythe Trophy. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Hufflin back into his own zone. Tried to clear, could not. Shin to the front of the net. Score!
After video review, the call on the ice stands.
For Schwartz, and he didn't get much on it. Kozak back for Schwartz. Scores! And the St. Louis Blues capitalize on the power play and have a 2-0 lead. Around the boards, Ryan O'Reilly ahead. It goes for J.D. Schwartz. Two in the game. Schwartz in on goal, scores! And it is raining hats here in St. Louis.
Natural hat trick for Jaden Schwartz. That was back in the first round against the Winnipeg Jets. That's a pretty good thing to have on your resume as we debate potential Conn Smythe Trophy winners at this point as we enter into the final four of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. This weekend at Rumors, his last night in town, from The Daily Show, Michael Costa is in town. Tickets available for the late show tonight. The early show is all sold out. You can get them at rumorscomedyclub.com.
14 more sleeps until Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
You actually,
2 weeks.
Did you count?
Or that's it, 2 weeks.
Okay, there you go.
Weeks from today.
No, it's 2 weeks from tomorrow. It's Sunday.
Which would make it 14 sleeps.
No, I think it's Saturday.
It's Sunday. I can promise you.
26th.
It's Sunday. I can absolutely promise you that it is Sunday the 26th. You're right, but today's the 11th.
Right.
It's 15 days.
Yeah, 15 days.
Counting. Not as he's strong suit.
Good point.
Which is weird because his dad's a math professor.
Yeah, didn't obviously, it must have skipped a generation.
It does.
Yeah, Ariel is going to be a math whiz.
No, Gil's good at math.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
My sister's good at math.
Well, then it
my dad
skip
obviously
it
is good at math,
yeah,
but
as he didn't
me, I'm not so good with the numbers.
Yeah.
Or the English.
Or the English. Exactly. Anyways. Yeah.
What am I good with? Eating?
Definitely. And
I'm good at eating,
analyzing Conn Smythe potential trophy winners.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I mean, you look at it, I mean, we talk about this time every year, right? After the second round, Dave, that's when you start to talk more about the Conn Smythe. But, you know, I look at that, you know, Bruins Hurricane Series Game 1. And, you know, I talked about it a couple of segments ago, Patrice Bergeron's game-winning goal. I mean, for me, Patrice Bergeron has probably been the most valuable skater. But when you're talking about Tuukka Rask, I mean, you look at his numbers, guys, in the playoffs, and he was obviously good, you know, last round, and he was good in the first round against Toronto. But you could argue that Freddie Anderson outplayed him in that first round. But you know, Tuukka Rask, to me, his number is 912 save percentage. That doesn't, or pardon me, not 912 save percentage. 912 save percentage. Yeah. And, you know, you think, okay, well, you know, his save percentage has got to be better than that. But, you know, it's really his work in the second round that was the most impressive to me. And he was also really good in the, game one of the East final, especially in the second period when Carolina had 15 shots. But, you know, Rask has been just so solid for the Bruins. And so I think those are probably the top two candidates on the Bruins. And, you know, when you look at the Sharks, I mean, for me, Logan Couture, you could definitely make the argument for him. Mm-hmm. Brent Burns, you could make an argument for him. Thomas Hertl, he's got 9 goals. And then when you talk about the Hurricanes, I mean, I probably would say that, you know, Sebastian Aho is up there. Jordan Staal has been really good. And then when you talk about the St. Louis Blues, I mean, look no further than Jaden Schwartz. I mean, how many big goals has that guy scored? And then when you're talking about defense, obviously Alex Pietrangelo is in the conversation. But Jordan Binnington, even though his numbers, again, haven't been as impressive, I think his save percentage is at 907 or 908. But think of how many big saves Binnington has made in the first couple of rounds.
915 save percentage is where
Okay, a little bit better. But still, not as good as the regular season. He was around 930.
Yeah. You know, to me, right now, if I had to pick somebody, I mean, Tuukka Rask out of Boston has just been absolutely tremendous as of late. I mean, his numbers are extraordinary. I mean, if you look at, you know, if you're going to pick somebody from each individual team, from St. Louis, to me, it's Jaden Schwartz.
Yep.
More than Binnington. I mean, you can certainly make an argument for Pietrangelo given the ice time he's gobbling up on the back end. Logan Couture, like you mentioned, he would be my favorite out of San Jose. But right now, it is completely wide open. And it really will depend on this next round. I mean, this is the, you know, you're obviously not going to win a Conn Smythe until
If it's the Bruin Sharks final, then what we're talking about makes sense, right? You're talking about Bergeron, talking about Rask.
Out of Carolina,
Brent Burns, a lot
Jacob
of people.
Slavin out of Carolina. 11 assists, which I think is third in the behind of all defenders right now.
Yeah.
He's averaging about 26 minutes a game. Yeah, I mean, he's really kind
it's
of
his coming out party.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, it's been there hasn't been that one dominant player.
I think maybe the closest thing in round two was Brent Burns. I mean, Brent Burns, what did he have? 8 points in the second round, 9 points in the second round. I mean, he's been incredible.
Yeah.
He was really good against Vegas.
10 points in that series.
Sorry, 10 points in the second round series, right?
Record.
Against the Avalanche. Yeah. So, I mean, Burns has been so good, but you know, so many big goals from Couture and Hertl. And obviously, you know, Joe Pavelski scored in his first game back in that series after he missed the first 6 games. But yeah, absolutely. I think when you're looking at, you know, dominant performances, not just in one round, but the first 2 rounds, I mean, Patrice Bergeron was excellent in the first round against the Leafs. And obviously, you know, that game went to 7 games and he had, you know, a few games where he didn't produce along with Marchand and Pasternak on that top line, but completely wide open. But you're right, it's going to depend a lot on what happens here in the third round. But you know, just a lot of unbelievable performances. And when you're talking about Bergeron, what's most impressive to me is how he shut down the other centers that he faced.
Well,
right?
I mean, he does. He's that's why he could win the Selke every single year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, he could win the Hart every single year if you really wanted to look at something besides just the strict numbers. I mean, not that his numbers are anything to sneeze at, but he is. I mean, he is the heart and soul of the Boston Bruins. He is their. He's what makes everything work in Boston is the ability to throw Patrice Bergeron on the ice and say, shut down the opposition, and while you're at it, score a couple goals, and you know we'll win another Stanley Cup on the back of your performance. He's still underappreciated, which is hard to believe given just how impressive his entire career has been and how great of a player he is both internationally and in the NHL and everything else.
Yeah, we've talked about this. He's a surefire Hall of Famer. He's had an unbelievable career. There's nothing that he hasn't won, right? I mean, we're talking about Olympics, we're talking about World Juniors, and, you know, he could win his second Stanley Cup ring this year. So, I mean, if I am picking one guy, I mean, this is just my own personal pick, because I think that's, you know, what you wanted here. You wanted us to each pick one guy.
Yeah.
So if I'm picking one guy, it's got to be Patrice Bergeron for me.
Well, I mean, I'm going to go with Tuukka Rask, because I think what he's been able to do for the Boston Bruins is not just, again, obviously this is specifically about the playoffs, but he's just been so good, especially I think he's 32, so I just like what he's been able to do for this Bruins team.
Can I extrapolate those answers to mean that you guys think the Bruins are the Stanley Cup favorite right now?
I don't think there is a Stanley Cup favorite.
I wouldn't know. I'm just saying based on currently. I really don't. The answer is no, Dave.
One cannot extrapolate.
No, I honestly really don't. I think Ezzy and I are probably going to say the same thing. It's just I don't really think that there's a favorite to make it. I mean, obviously they've won the first game, but
right.
I would not rule out Carolina.
No, and I do think that Boston is going to win the series. I mean, it's not over. I mean, like Dave said, we've only had one game here, and Carolina has actually responded really well. We talked about the first round going down 2-0 to Washington, but if we're just basing it on two rounds and one game, I mean, it's got to be Bergeron for me, and Rask was really good as well. We talked about that, but when you're talking about the West Final, I mean, you know, if Logan Couture continues to put up,
Brent Burns puts up another 10 points.
Well, exactly. And then Couture and Burns are in the conversation. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, for me, Sharks and Bruins would be the favorites. That's who I think is going to be, in the Stanley Cup final. But I mean,
Joe Thornton Cup.
I mean, why count the Blues out, right? I mean, we counted the Blues out against the Jets and it looked like, you know, they weren't going to get out of the second round against the Avalanche. But, you know, here they are. And I think that's going to be a tight series.
The Edmonton Oilers have a new general manager. His name is Ken Holland. Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 Radio in Edmonton is going to join us next to talk about that hiring. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live Saturday morning on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The Edmonton Oilers have a new general manager. His name is Ken Holland. You know him as the former GM in Detroit. We're now joined by Dave Jamieson from TSN Radio in Edmonton to talk about that hire. Dave, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Always good to be with you guys.
Always our pleasure, Dave. Obviously, it was a big day for the Oilers organization in announcing Ken Holland as the new general manager. Does it put any bit of a sour taste on it when, you know, you think about that? It seemed like Kelly McCrimmon was really the man they wanted for the job, and he ended up staying in Vegas. And not that Ken Holland is their second choice, because he certainly got the bona fides of a great historical NHL general manager, but it didn't seem like he was the primary choice for the job, but from Bob Nicholson.
No, I think you're right. It's a great consolation prize if you want to go that way. You're right. I mean, Kelly McCrimmon was the bright shiny toy in the pursuit. There were Mark Hunter was there, obviously. Sean Burt, from all reports, impressed her in the interview. And Ken Holland was not on the radar. And certainly, given what had happened in Detroit, it seemed like an orderly transition of power. Steve Yzerman coming in to be the general manager, Holland would, you know, seemingly elevate and be happy as the elder statesman and the guy to, you know, do whatever was needed in the Detroit organization with Yzerman there. But then all of that changed very quickly based on what Nicholson and Holland said, you know, a conversation at the U18. Next thing you know, the courtship sped up very quickly. And then you have Ken Holland sitting at a news conference in Edmonton. He's 5 years, $25 million. He's handsomely rewarded to try and make sense of a team that makes no sense.
You know, Dave, you mentioned that press conference earlier this week, and, you know, Ken Holland mentions that Ken Hitchcock isn't going to be back as the head coach. I guess, how quickly do you expect Ken Holland to name his next head coach? And when you're talking about all of the work that he has in front of him, and, you know, I'm not going to ask you about, you know, Milan Lucic and the possibility of him being bought out, because, you know, it's been talked ad nauseum about that. But when you're talking about, you know, some of the next steps, I mean, what are you expecting? Are you expecting him to be very busy at the NHL draft? We know that the Oilers have the 8th overall pick, but when you're talking about, you know, some of the movement that we might see, I mean, how active do you think Holland is going to be in his first month as GM?
Well, coach is the first thing, and talking to, you know, people a whole bunch closer to it than I am, they're thinking 2 to 3 weeks max to get a coach. Of course, from there come the assistant coaches. They like what they've got in Bakersfield, so they should with the Condors. Jay Woodcroft is there. Leave him alone. Let the players who need more time at the AHL level to continue to work on their craft. That part of the organization, you know, is working well. And amateur scouting has improved under Keith Gretzky. Now, you know, you still have to determine what Keith Gretzky's role is going to be, if there is, in fact, a role for him. Coach is the priority, and then they may go with a couple of assistants to Ken Holland. So it's a very, I think a top heavy organization in terms of bodies, money being spent. But all of that said, you know, the margin for error is razor thin now for this organization. They have to get it figured out. The season ticket renewals are, you know, I don't know what has happened since Holland's hiring, whether that's helped or not, but the Oilers are in a fairly dire situation in terms of corporate partnerships and that kind of thing, and people renewing their suites and you know, there's that business, the very unsexy side of the business, but very important. There's the winning of the hockey games, and that's really tough, but they've also got to be able to figure out the business side as well. So there's a lot happening, and Ken Holland will have to get his coach in place first, and I don't know what he's going to do at the draft. I think, you know, eighth gets you a good player, but probably not a, you know, franchise-changing player. That doesn't mean that he can't build out something. Perhaps a Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who's coming off his best season, that would be disappointing on a level, but they're going to have to move somebody out to get a piece or two in that they desperately need.
You know, Dave, you touched on it a little bit with your last answer, but with a team that has made the playoffs, just once in their last 13 seasons, and obviously you have a new GM, you're going to have a new coach, so obviously there's not going to be any changes in that regard, but how much patience, you know, in my mind, Edmonton's got to be one of the most engaged fan bases that there is in the NHL, so how much patience can there be? Because, you know, I mean, again, this is a team that has Connor McDavid, has a lot of other pieces within this fan base for you know, more sort of development or waiting for something to happen.
There isn't a lot. You're absolutely correct. They're very engaged. I might also add they're very angry.
Mm-hmm.
And they've earned the right to be angry because of what you just said. You know, one playoff appearance in 13 years, that's not enough. And what really stings even more is that you have Connor McDavid. You have a 50-goal scorer in Leon Draisaitl. And so people are sitting there going, if you've got the, you know, we can have a debate on this, whether Connor McDavid is the best player in the world or the second-best player in the world, he is franchise-changing. The problem is the franchise hasn't changed. And that's why people are mystified, and then they get pretty angry soon thereafter as to why it can't work. Why isn't it working? So, if you looked at this roster and it didn't have McDavid and maybe it had Draisaitl and, you know, a few other pieces, you'd go, okay, well, they're probably where they should be. But you can't kind of make all of the pieces go together and figure out what's happened here. It's baffling. I mean, you know, we could sit here and say they really don't have a number one goaltender, and you'd be correct. They've got a really, really weak third and fourth line. And they lack a stud right-handed shooting defenseman that can drive a power play and, be a real force from the back end.
Dave Jamieson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave is with our sister station, TSN Radio Edmonton, talking about the Oilers' hiring of Ken Holland. Ken, how much pause does Ken Holland's lack of recent success with the Red Wings give to the Oilers and their fan base that this is the right guy for the job? I mean, obviously he had the great success earlier on with the Red Wings, but the last, you know, 5-7 years have sort of been thin gruel for the Red Wings.
Well, that was one of the, you know, depending on where you want to go to get your insight and reaction, you know, online, there were people saying he's yesterday's news. He's a guy who succeeded in a different NHL. Now, and Holland clearly knows that that is being said about him because he spoke to it in the news conference saying, you know, listen, yeah, the results in Detroit over the last, you know, several years have not been to the liking of him himself or to the Ilitch family. However, Detroit's about to get a lot of cap space, and they've got a ton of picks. Some of those coming in the Tatar trade, but also there has been a, Yzerman and the group he's bringing in there are going to have some stuff to work with. You know, and they've got Dylan Larkin, and they've got some other pieces in there. Yeah, they've got work ahead of them in Detroit, but, you know, to say that Holland leaves a burning building wouldn't be correct in Detroit. Part of what happened in Detroit, and I think people need to remember this, is, yeah, there was a period where there was no cap, and then there was a cap, but also ownership under the late Mike Ilitch. he really wanted to continue the success that the Red Wings had had and would go out and probably spend money he didn't need to spend or shouldn't have spent on free agents to maintain a level of success, when really a better business model would have been to start shedding some of that, stripping it down and beginning a rebuild, you know, at a different time and in a different way.
You know, Dave, just to go back to the Oilers GM search, you mentioned at the press conference, Bob Nicholson said that, you know, Ken Holland was my man and he was the one that I was going to recommend to Oilers owner Daryl Cates. But clearly the Oilers had some interest in Kelly McCrimmon, and then the Vegas Golden Knights obviously promoted McCrimmon to general manager. But, you know, based on what you've been able to discover, how close were the Oilers to getting Kelly McCrimmon on board as GM?
You know, I don't know definitively, and that this may come out, and more likely we won't fully know how close they were in the, you know, in the courtship to get Kelly McCrimmon here. Obviously there was great interest. He seemed to check a lot of boxes for the Oilers and probably a whole bunch of other teams that would need a GM, but I don't know, to be quite honest with you, how close they got to pulling the trigger on that deal. I believe they were probably closer on Mark Hunter. And that the whole McCrimmon thing, I'm sure there were conversations. Again, I don't know how deep they went. And for Vegas, it was a great preemptive strike to elevate him and make sense. It's a smart move. You know, a lot of that organization, they've done, you know, they've got it right out of the gate. So I'm not surprised that McCrimmon stayed in Vegas. It's not a shock to me at all. And I don't know how many other people went, wow, I can't believe he's staying.
Dave, the Bakersfield Condors, the Oilers Farm Club, are currently down 3-1 to the San Diego Gulls in their second round series. But, you know, how much excitement is there in Edmonton, at least with some of the prospects? You got Evan Bouchard, Caleb Jones, Ethan Bear, some of those younger guys playing with Bakersfield. So getting that experience, especially getting playoff experience, even if they don't manage to pull off a series win against San Diego.
Oh, it's critically important. I think what's, you know, knowing that Ken Holland is the guy now in charge of everything in hockey, people can get excited knowing what's coming. But the Edmonton hockey fans, they're like the kid who's being told, yes, there's a gift under the Christmas tree, but you can't open it just yet. Like they know that Bouchard's coming, and they know that Bouchard is going to be good or very good or great, and they know that Caleb Jones is going to be good or great. They can see stuff just on the horizon, but because it's Holland, because of his philosophy, you know, that largely in Detroit is you over-ripen, right? You just leave, they would leave guys down in Grand Rapids or Adirondack or wherever their farm team was at the time, and until it was almost, you thought, like, God, you know, when are they ever going to come up? And then when they did, they were NHLers right out of the box. You know, they knew how to play within the Detroit system at the time, and I think that's what they're going to try and achieve here is go slow, patch and fill. I mean, and certainly with the forward position, I mean, you got Tyler Benson, who's also, you know, close. Don't know about Kyler Yamamoto. I don't know if that's going to be a thing. And, you know, they've also got a guy who's been here with the Oilers that they got to fix and figure out in Jesse Puljujarvi. Sure. You know, he's had hip surgery this offseason to correct something that was from not an injury, but from a birth, that, you know, sort of an abnormality that they're going to deal with that they think is going to help the skating. But they've got to get that thing, you know, that project completed or move on from it.
Dave, last question for you. Was this search for the general manager broad enough and wide enough, or did, or was it sort of, you know, constricted by Bob Nicholson and his ties to Hockey Canada and maybe the blinders he wears and really focusing on player on individuals he knows through his Hockey Canada days?
An excellent question. You know, when all of this starts, when it started, rather, you know, Bob Nicholson has the news conference and says, and I'm paraphrasing here, you know, we will comb the entire planet for the best candidate. And then you sort of nod and go, okay, sure. And then you realize that it's probably what he means by the planet is probably a half a dozen people that would be suitable candidates, you know. So I think, you know, and that's one of the things that's a narrative that's come up about Bob Nicholson. You know, he had great success with Hockey Canada, but that is a different animal than running an NHL team, right? It's obviously a different pace, and there is a different kind of pressure. Doesn't mean that there isn't pressure. It's just doesn't Hockey Canada doesn't carry the scrutiny and the intensity of certainly a Canadian NHL team, not even close, right? It's a, yes, they're playing the same sport, but it's not the same business. And so, you know, I think there's always going to be, you know, did they really turn over every rock to, you know, find the next bright young general manager? I thought they would go young and kind of, you know, and really surprise a lot of people, but they played it safe. That doesn't mean it's wrong, but it is a good safe choice as opposed to a really creative one, and we'll see how it turns out.
Dave Jamieson is with TSN Radio in Edmonton. He's the host of the Dave Jamieson Show. Dave, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll speak to you again in the off season.
Always good to chat with you. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Dave. When we come back, our thoughts on the hiring of Ken Holland. One final segment to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
And I think it's fair for Oiler fans to look at the last, you know, number of years in Detroit and say, that's concerning. You have to evaluate a guy on his entire body of work, not just on his previous success. But I think Ken Holland is the right guy. And I think that he, you know, hearing that he still has this fire in his belly and wanted to do this.
That's TSN's Ryan Rashog talking about the Oilers' hiring of Ken Holland. One final segment. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. Few minutes left to go. So is Ken Holland? I mean, Ken Holland has been great to us on this program. He's joined us a number of times when he was general manager of the Detroit Red Wings. His legacy in Detroit is going to be the Stanley Cups that they won, but his last number of years hasn't been great in Detroit. Is this the right hire for Edmonton at this time?
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, everyone talks about, you know, how the Red Wings haven't been that great over the last two or three years, but they're rebuilding. Mm-hmm. I mean, after Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk were gone, I mean, you knew the Red Wings weren't going to be very good. They made the playoffs, you know, every year for, what was it, 23 years, Dave?
25.
25 years, so there you go. And you knew that the last few years weren't going to be that great. But they were actually pretty competitive this year. A lot of one-goal games for the Red Wings, and, you know, you saw guys like Dylan Larkin, Anthony Mantha, Tyler Bertuzzi really develop. But back to, you know, the hiring of Holland as GM of the Oilers. I mean, a lot of people, I think, were wanting maybe a fresh face. A lot of people wanted Mark Hunter.
If you're a beat-down Oilers fan who's been absolutely destroyed by the franchise over the last decade plus, does Ken Holland move the needle for you?
I think he will. And this is why. And, you know, a lot of people point out to some of the bad contracts, right? People look at, you know, a guy like Franz Nielsen
or Justin Appelkader
is one of them. But, you know, the Red Wings are trending in the right direction. They've got a high pick. I think they have number six in the upcoming draft. And when you've got guys like Philip Zadina, Joe Valeno, I mean, we've talked about, you know, Michael Rasmussen, another good player, Dennis Cholowski on the back end. I mean, the Red Wings are going to be good two or three years from now. I don't think they're going to be that good next year, but I think, you know, Ken Holland has so much experience. When you look at his history, he was first a scout for the Red Wings. Then he was assistant general manager. You're talking about, you know, Kenny Holland and Jimmy Devolano there, and obviously, you know, Stevie Wise taking over in Detroit. But you look at Holland's experience and how he has developed teams through different decades. I mean, he was with the organization for 36 years, the Red Wings. I mean, he has been with them since the 1980s. I mean, really incredible, right? So when you're talking about, you know, this Oilers team, I mean, I think you want someone with the experience and someone who's, you know, been a scout, who's been an assistant general manager. Cause, you know, we talked about it with Dave Jamieson last segment. I mean, not only do the Oilers have to figure out what they're doing with, you know, some of their younger players, but you need to bring in a number one goalie, Dave. You need to bring in a number one defenseman. I mean, Evan Bouchard is a really good D prospect, but Evan Bouchard's not going to step in and win the Norris Trophy next year. So I think you want somebody at the helm who has all of this experience, and he's been through this. He's been through a rebuild with the Red Wings.
I think I would like it more if he was GM for a couple of years and he was grooming somebody underneath him to take over from him. Right now, he seems like a bit of a stopgap measure for the Oilers, Dave.
Well, I think the biggest problem...
I don't think so. They signed him to 5 years.
I know, but that I think the biggest impediment is the fact that you've got an organization, as we talked about with Dave Jamieson just last segment, that's been to the playoffs once in 13 years. Mm-hmm. I think Ken Holland is phenomenal with his overall vision and what he's able to do.
Right.
As Dave talked about, the idea that look what he did in Grand Rapids, how they've been a successful team for so many years, winning the Calder Trophy. I mean, this is a team that that you know has had success at the AHL level. His NHL teams have obviously had success. So there's a philosophy there. But the problem is he's up against the idea of a win now. We live in an instant gratification society.
In Edmonton,
and
really
Edmonton is even more so. So that's what he's up against. It'll be a tough one, but I think he's qualified.
That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to our guests, Dave Jamieson. We were joined by Amy Marks, of course, to talk about the Western Conference Finals. Josh Smith, scouting the refs.com. Corey Lavalette to discuss the Hurricanes. And Ken Danico of NHL Network, in case you missed any of the show. It's available on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's on tsn1290.ca. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review when you download it so you can hear how much you love the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli and Zappia Group Realty. Reminder, programming note, next week's show, 12 noon, we're going to start here on TSN 1290. We have coverage of the World Hockey Championships. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.